All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today we are going to be talking with the Falcoholics, Kevin Knight, about the Falcons' draft plans, trading up, who he likes, all that sort of stuff.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman. Been covering the Falcons for many years at FalcFans.com, on Twitter at FalcFans, and, of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. Of course, on this illustrious podcast, we have to have illustrious guests, and I have another one with me, good friend of mine, Kevin, who's always game to talk Falcons, always game to talk draft, and we have him here again today to talk and give us sort of his thought process on where direction he thinks the Falcons are going to go, or maybe the direction that he wants them to go, so that on draft night, when they inevitably do the thing the opposite of what we all expect them to do, he can at least preface sort of where his head is going to be at on that particular night. So welcome back to the show, Kevin.
Thank you. Thank you, Aaron. Yeah, it's good to be back. I think it's been longer than usual in between shows. It must have, you know, so obviously, you know, we got lost in the wash there, but happy to be back. You know, the draft is kind of my wheelhouse. So this is the perfect time, really.
Yeah. And for those of you guys, and I'll give Kevin a chance at the end of the show to plug this even further. But for those of you guys that don't know or just need the reminder, that Kevin shares a show with Eric Robinson, Falcoholic Live, and you guys are now twice a week.
We're every 2 weeks in the off season.
Okay.
And then we will also be doing day one and day two of the draft. The draft party, our usual shtick there. So we'll be on live during the draft itself as
okay.
well.
Okay. All right. Anyway, so twice a week. I just assume everybody's doing daily podcasts now. so let's jump right into it. Okay. Let's talk about the idea of trading up, because that's sort of been sort of, at least on Falcons Twitter, been sort of the thing that has been a major talking point in sort of our circle of peers and friends and occasionally adversaries. So I'm just curious, sort of, do you think the Falcons will trade up? And if so, who do you think that will be for?
I think they want to. I think they want to trade up in that 7 to 8 range to get ahead of Buffalo. And I think that Ed Oliver is who they want. I think that's their primary target. But we're seeing now, and to preface this, I don't think the pro day stuff and the combine stuff changes things for teams nearly as much as it does for analysts, because we don't necessarily know. I mean, I think everyone basically knew that Oliver was this incredible athlete, you know, a very special player from an athletic standpoint. But we didn't know exactly how much. And so seeing the numbers at his pro day, how absurd they were. I mean, he ran the same 3-cone as Antonio Brown. You know, I think we didn't know that, but I think teams basically did. Maybe not that he would be that impressive, but that he was this crazy athlete. I mean, the teams talk to his coaches, they talk to his trainer, his agent. They get these numbers. So the pro day and the combine are more confirmation for them than getting these things for the first time. So after Oliver's pro day, we saw his stock like shoot up as far as what analysts think. He's always been a top five player for me. Him falling to 14 was always a long shot. I do still think, for me, I still think there's about a 30% chance that he will fall to 14, just because the draft is so unpredictable. But if the Falcons want to guarantee that they get Ed Oliver, they will have to get up in front of Buffalo. I think Buffalo is the biggest threat to take him. So if he gets past Tampa Bay, who has recently started to take him more in mock drafts, and who knows exactly what if that's important or meaningful in any way, but it's really all we have to go off at this point. So if he does get past Tampa Bay, I do think that they will try to pull off a trade to 7 or 8 to get Oliver. I think he's their number one target.
So Oliver's an interesting player because he seems to be at least somewhat polarizing to a lot of fans. And I know there are some people that are absolutely think he's, you know, the greatest thing ever. And then there's some people that want nothing to do with him as far as the Falcons are concerned. And I'm sort of curious from your perspective, why are some of the reasons why you like Ed Oliver, and why are some of the reasons why you think the Falcons are going to covet Ed Oliver?
Yeah, I think Oliver is kind of a difficult evaluation for, particularly for amateur scouts. And I don't mean that as a shot at anyone, including fans. Like, I'm an amateur scout as well. I don't have professional credentials to do this, but because he was played out of position, because the production wasn't necessarily there, you have to kind of watch Oliver's technique and how he goes about with his reps. And the flash plays aren't there. They're not as obvious as they are with players like Christian Wilkins, for example. Wilkins was an absurdly productive player, and I think he's very easy to scout because of that. But with a guy like Oliver, who was playing at one tech at 280 pounds and basically taking on doubles or even triples at times in Houston's defense, he's a little bit more of a difficult evaluation. So I do want to preface this by saying that people that watch him and say like, oh, I don't know what the big deal is, it's not the easiest evaluation in the world. That being said, I think you can basically see what you need to see from Oliver. Ever since his freshman season where he just posted absurd production and he kind of got on the radar as this Aaron Donald-esque prospect, you could tell that he was a special athlete. But then Houston kind of did weird things with him. They basically were like, okay, Oliver, we need you to take on doubles and triples every single play, or our defense isn't going to be able to do anything. So that's what he did. He played one tech basically his entire last season. And to be fair, he played it pretty well. The biggest thing for Oliver that I love is his use of leverage. He's always the low man off the ball. He's clearly an expert at generating leverage, and that's how he can take on double teams at 280 pounds and still wreak havoc. But you don't see a lot of those like three-tech type penetration plays where he just explodes into the backfield and gets to go after the quarterback. And that's why a lot of people consider him a projection at three-tech, which I don't really understand. I think that that's a much simpler role for him, and he'll be great at it. But I don't have the concerns that a lot of people have. He plays with such good leverage. I think he's just a freakish athlete in terms of his strength, even at 280 pounds. Like, I don't have any concerns with him playing against the run at three tech. Now, I don't think he should be playing one tech in the NFL and taking on double teams or two gapping, but I can see why there are the concerns about his size, but I tend to think that if you really look closely at his game and you look at the scheme that he's going in, he's not a 3-4 defensive end like some people have him. He's not a stand-up linebacker, Titans, my goodness. But as a three-tech defensive tackle, I don't care if he's 280. He can play on all three downs, and I think he'll be a tremendous force there.
Yeah. You know, like the whole like lack of production thing is weird to me because I guess it's because he didn't put up these monster sack numbers. But like when you look at the stat that translates the best from at least projecting D tackles or really any defensive lineman to the NFL, it's tackles for loss. And he had like 53 in 3 years, which is a ridiculous number. Like Aaron Donald, I think in his first 3 years at Pitt had like 38 or something like that. And then he had like a ridiculous like 30 his last year. But like it's one of those things where it's like when people sort of knock Ed Oliver, he didn't produce, you know, and he played in the AAC, and it's like if you don't think he didn't produce, I think you're looking at the wrong stats. And Again, I think you're right. The not getting the sacks is due to the fact that he was playing one tech and getting doubled all the time. But in terms of his ability to be disruptive, and, you know, the great Josh Norris over at RotoWorld always says this, but, you know, disruption is production. And that's what he is. That's what Grady Jarrett was. Grady Jarrett had, like, 5 sacks in his college career, but had a ton of tackles for loss. Mm-hmm. And so I think if people do knock Ed Oliver for that specific reason, you know, and I think you can find issues with Ed Oliver, you know, in a variety of places. I don't think he's sort of as clean as, say, a Christian Wilkins or a Quinnen mm-hmm. Williams, who are relatively safe given, you know, you're not projecting them to play a completely different position than what they played in college. And you're looking primarily at traits and whatnot with Ed Oliver and sort of translating to a different role. But, I just think that whole production knock is just kind of crazy to me.
Yeah. And it's really easy to production scout. You know, I get it, fans. Like, you guys maybe don't have enough time to, like, literally sit down and watch 3 or 5 games of these prospects, and I don't blame you. But production scouting just really doesn't give you a clear picture. And, you know, you can knock the AAC if you want. I mean, I think there are advanced analytics arguments to be made that the AAC is a more powerful conference in terms of strength of schedule than the Pac-12 at this point. It's a Power 5 conference, but, I think that if you're going to go to that argument, and let's just use Christian Wilkins as an example, because he's a player I like as well, but I don't have graded as high as Oliver, despite his high production. And if you're going to knock Oliver for playing in the AAC and not going up against a ton of ranked teams and all that, you also have to understand that Christian Wilkins was playing on Clemson's defense, which was basically NFL players at every position all over the field, whereas Ed Oliver was basically on that defense with, I guess, Isaiah Johnson, who is like a borderline day two, day three prospect, and he's really that because of his measurables. His tape is actually pretty bad. So, you know, you need to acknowledge not just strength of opponent, but also was he surrounded by all these great players? I mean, you look at players like Shaq Lawson, who looked awesome on Clemson's defense and then came to the NFL and, you know, has had a very disappointing career, to say the least. So it's more complicated than just saying, oh, the strength of opponent or this and that. It's very complicated. So it's basically you're trying to scout the traits of a player and try to project that to the NFL when he may, and it's a completely different level of competition. So it's not as easy as, oh, this guy had great production, he's going to be great. You know, and I have the same thing with Jalen Ferguson. Great production. And then I watched him try to go through the three cone drill and he had to do it, what, six or seven times even complete it. And I'm all the way out. So, you know, it's more difficult than just looking at production.
Yeah. So, we'll come back and talk a little bit more with Kevin about some other things with this draft that aren't related to Ed Oliver. But before we get there, I do want to remind you guys that there is an NBA side of the Lockdown Podcast Network where you can find a daily podcast devoted to all 30 NBA teams, including the Locked On Hawks podcast hosted by Brad Rowland. Find that on whatever podcast platform you prefer, including the new Himalaya podcast app, your team every day. So, Kevin, you know, you've already mentioned and we've discussed Ed Oliver to a certain extent. We could probably do a whole episode about Ed Oliver specifically, but I do want to have a little bit more of a comprehensive discussion today. You've already mentioned sort of your thoughts that Ed Oliver is sort of the apple of the Falcons' eye. Do you feel like there's another possible player that the Falcons could sort of covet as maybe their number two option? Or, you know, if you've already mentioned sort of them potentially trading up, you know, I guess I'd ask you, who do you sort of see them potentially target, or maybe a group of players that they could potentially target if they were to decide to stay put at that pick 14?
Yeah, I mean, if they trade up, I think it's going to be for Ed Oliver. I could also see them having that deal in place for someone like Brian Burns. If he's there, I think he's the perfect fit as like a better Vic Beasley. He's not Vic Beasley, folks. I know a lot of people seem to think that Brian Burns is just another Vic Beasley, but he's a much more polished prospect. He's got a lot more length, and he's a much more physical presence against the run. So I'd be all in on Burns with that trade up as well, because I think the chances of him falling past the Packers are pretty slim, and Miami too, for that matter. But I honestly do think that if the trade up falls through or Ed Oliver's gone early, that it's an offensive tackle at 14. And we know they like Cody Ford a lot. Vaughn McClure has been all over that, saying that they love his toughness. Juwan Taylor would be my top choice for an offensive tackle. If he's there, he's great. He's the best offensive tackle in this class. Prototypical size, scheme diverse, natural right tackle as well. Unlike Jonah Williams, who's going to have a little bit of a period of adjustment to go back to the right side. But I do think that it might end up being an offensive tackle. I think the edge options at 14 are going to be pretty slim. So it's basically pray for Ed Oliver or an offensive tackle to fall. Maybe someone like Burns falls through because of size concerns, which I think his size at the combine basically dispelled a lot of that. But yeah, I know a lot of fans aren't really excited about an offensive tackle at 14, but based on everything that Dimitroff has said about, oh, we were like committed to protecting Matt Ryan, and they've basically met with every single first round offensive tackle. You know, I think that's basically their fallback option if they can't trade up for the guy that they want.
Yeah. You know, the whole Brian Burns, Vic Beasley comparison, you know, I guess the way I would sort of term it is like, yeah, he is similar to Vic Beasley, but he's like the guy that we thought Vic Beasley would be, not the guy that Vic Beasley is, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, he's, you know, hopefully he's more that, you know, 2016 Vic Beasley, rather than, you know, every other year of Vic Beasley, at least since 2016. So, you know, you talked about sort of them staying put and potentially sort of targeting an offensive tackle, but looking at some of those other edge options, I'm sort of curious, who are those guys that you're sort of not as keen on, at least as far as the Falcons are concerned, at that edge position?
I'm all the way out on Rashawn Gary. I just think that guy's going to be a bust. I can't get behind him. I know there's a lot of people that really like his potential. To me, Rashawn Gary is basically like a similar – he's in like a similar boat to Ed Oliver, where he didn't produce and may or may not have been played out of position in college. But I just – whereas I see it with Ed Oliver, Rashawn Gary to me is just like a projection totally. Because I don't think he can play on the edge and be a productive pass rusher on the edge. And I think he's too small to play defensive tackle full time. So that would make him that sort of Adrian Claiborne inside outside player, which I think that's his best shot to be a successful NFL player, but it's a big risk. He's that classic honeypot type player to me. That's like, oh, he's so tantalizing and look at the measurables and all this. And then he just falls flat on his face in the NFL. No offense to Rashawn Gary. I hope he has a great career, but I'm not in on that. And I do like Cleveland Farrell. I would consider him at 14, but with where he's projected to go, and I think he's more of a secondary pass rusher. I think he's going to be that rock solid, consistent three down guy. That's a perfect pair for someone like Tap McKinley if he can reach his ceiling. So is he worth the 14th pick? Probably. But I think that he's more of a tertiary option for the Falcons, and they'll prefer an offensive tackle to him. And then there's like more of the late first round guys like Charles Omenihu. I like him better as like a late first trade up target than like Rashawn Gary at 14. He's kind of that same type of inside outside hybrid player. Chase Winovich, if he falls to 45, absolutely, let's do it. But edge just thins out so fast after those top guys.
I want to ask you a little bit about Montez Sweat when we come back, but I do want to let the listeners know that you should check out the new Himalaya podcast app. In this ever expanding podcast world, the Himalaya app has you covered with their carefully curated playlists and new features every day. Find it at your app store. So, Kevin, you did mention Montez Sweat in sort of talking about the other edges. That sounds like you think he's a lock to go before, to be off the board by the time the Falcons pick.
Yeah, I think he's probably going to go before Brian Burns, honestly. I think he's a top 10 lock. But yeah, if he falls to 14, absolutely, let's do it. I had some concerns about his overall athleticism and ability to bend, but his testing showed that he can do it. He just didn't have to, maybe in college, because he was so absurdly powerful with his bull rush. He just dominated people with that. So he does have that appearance of a very well-rounded player that just kind of needs to develop a little bit, some more moves. So yeah, I do like Montez Sweat. I would totally be into taking him at 14 if he's there.
You know, let's sort of move past the first round and just sort of get your overview on sort of what you're expecting from the Falcons and sort of maybe a comprehensive strategy on those first 2 days of the draft, where you're presumably thinking the Falcons are going to be targeting, you know, either instant starters or at least guys that will eventually become starters, usually in that second season, particularly when it comes to the first two rounds, when history has suggested that with the Falcons picks under Dan Quinn. So I'm curious, it sounds like, based off of your thoughts on the first round, that you expect the Falcons to go heavy and attack the trenches. I'm curious, you know, could you expand on that?
Yeah. I mean, I do think that in the first three rounds, assuming they stand pat, which I think is unlikely, to be honest, I think there is going to be a trade up at some point on day one or day two to get an additional first rounder, perhaps at the end of the first round, or to get additional day two picks, because I don't think they're going to be able to sign 9 players and expect them to make the roster. So I do expect some sort of trade up. But going into day two with the 3 picks that they have, I think they want to come out of there with at least one defensive lineman and at least one offensive lineman, you know, the offensive tackle probably. I wouldn't be shocked if it's 2 defensive linemen, an edge and a defensive tackle. But I think the other position we could see, not on day one, let me preface this. I think that they could look at a corner on day two. It's not as big of a need, but Quinn is always trying to find that next guy to shuffle in. So I know that the news broke that they were meeting with Isaiah Johnson today. And I like Johnson. He's that prototypical Dan Quinn corner, but that man is not ready to play anytime soon. Super raw, great measurables. So he's like kind of like a Jalen Collins-esque player. So he could be, you know, someone like him on day two could be an option as well. But I do think they want to come out of day three of the first three rounds with 2 to 3 trench players at minimum. And then the possibility of a corner is there as well.
You know, I guess we would be remiss to talk about this. The news today that the Falcons were visiting with former Saints defensive tackle, the free agent Tyler Davidson. I'm curious, what are your thoughts on that possible move? And sort of, do you think it would potentially impact the Falcons' draft plans, potentially for their sort of first round pick if they were to sign Davidson? Given that they would now have sort of 4, you know, capable defensive tackles under contract if they were to sign Davidson.
Yeah, I mean, that would seem to signal that they weren't going to go defensive tackle. I still think that Oliver would be their top option. Quinn has shown he's perfectly happy carrying 10 defensive linemen on the roster. So 5 defensive tackles and 5 edges. I mean, they're not afraid to do that. I tend to think that the Davidson signing is probably going to happen after the draft if it does happen, but I guess we'll find out here pretty soon if they do end up signing him. I know they like him a lot, Davidson, and they do have a lot of interest. But, I don't think this visit is really a sign that they're changing their draft plans. I think it's more of them doing due diligence on players because I think the chances of them landing Oliver, you know, are possibly lower than we initially thought. You know, there's no guarantee that the trade up is going to materialize. And if they have to stay at 14, they're probably not getting Oliver there. So I think the Davidson workout is due diligence. And if they don't get Oliver in the first round, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if they don't take a defensive tackle if they miss out on Oliver. I know a lot of fans seem to view defensive tackle as this really big need. But if you look at the roster as it stands, I mean, edge is clearly a much bigger need, particularly if you think Vic Beasley isn't going to be good. So if they do miss out on Oliver, I wouldn't be surprised if they simply go after two edge defenders relatively early in the draft and then just sign Davidson afterwards to kind of take on that fourth defensive tackle spot, because they still have Michael Bennett and Justin Zimmer there as well, two players that I think they trust as those kind of end of the roster depth guys. So they don't necessarily have to get a defensive tackle at this point.
Anything else you want to talk about, Kevin, before we duck out?
Let's see. I mean, I do think that a wide receiver is probably happening at some point because with 2020 is going to be tight money wise. And I think Sanu is probably a cap casualty unless he restructures his deal pretty significantly. And I'm a Sanu lover. So, I mean, I'm all in on Sanu staying if possible, but I think the chances of that happening are getting smaller. I think that they want to draft another guy to develop. We know they really like Georgia wide receiver Mecole Hardman. I think that there's a lot of quality players on day three that they could go after. I also am not sure that they're done tinkering at running back. Like Kenjon Bonner to me is just a return option. I don't think he's taken more than 25 running snaps in a year in his career. So he's not really a guy that you can depend on as your RB3 to actually play. And as much as I love Freeman and hope he stays healthy, if you go into the season with you know, Freeman, Ito Smith, who I have total confidence in, it's not a strike at Ito at all, and then Barner and possibly someone like Brian Hill as your running back group, if Freeman goes down, then you're basically stuck with Ito Smith and then hoping that Barner or Brian Hill can turn into like a quality option. And there's no really, really interesting receiving options of that group except maybe Freeman. And Smith is capable as well in that area, but I think that they do like to have that receiving threat at running back. So someone like James Williams from Washington State could be a late round guy. I like Justice Hill a lot. That's more of an early day three type of guy, but I think that it's very possible that they go after a running back as well if the value's right.
All right, Kevin, go ahead and plug your Twitter, plug any sort of upcoming content you got coming our ways on the internet.
Yes, so I am at Falcoholic Kevin on Twitter. I've got some more scouting reports coming up before the draft, at least one more mock draft, because I know everyone loves to hate on those. It's a labor of love. And the Falcoholic Live show, at Falcoholic Live on Twitter. We are now officially on YouTube because Facebook Live is trash. So we are done with Facebook Live on YouTube. You can watch it on the glory of your smart TV or other devices, as well as on your phone and such. But next week, not this week, we are doing our live 7-round mock draft on that show. So if you're interested in that, you can come in and chat with us while we do that. And then, like I said, we will also be doing the live draft shows as well on the first and second night of the draft. So look for those in the future as well.
Okay. Well, Kevin, I appreciate you coming on and sort of giving us your thoughts on what the Falcons draft plans may be, sort of who you like, who you don't necessarily like, and we'll see how it plays out. Certainly, it's always going to be an adventure when it comes to this team's draft plans, because they always seem to throw us a curveball, and you know, they'll draft Devin Bush number one, and we'll be like, okay. So we'll see how it goes, and I'm looking forward to seeing your and Eric's live reactions on YouTube and whatnot. On draft night, because I know the last couple of years has always been a little bit like, huh? Okay.
Yes, it's been great. Yes.
So I'm hoping they go 3 for 3, because I just get entertained by that. That I'm
it's
not
always
the only
great.
One.
I'm Some
not
great the only gifts one. Coming out of there. Yeah,
yeah. So, yeah. So, yeah. You know, these last couple of years, it's like, oh, they're trading up. They're going to get Forrest Lamp. Tack? Oh, okay.
Oh, man. My Forrest Lamp, my son. I miss you, buddy.
Yeah. And then last year, oh, they're getting Taven Bryant. Nope, Calvin Ridley. Oh,
yep.
Okay. All right.
Yep, the curveball. So it's definitely going to be a corner this year. That's I've like spread out. I'm like, oh, yeah, it could be this position or this position or this one, but it's definitely not going to be this one. So that's definitely the one they're going
to
choose.
That's how it goes, man. That's how it goes. So
yep.
I appreciate it, Kevin. And we'll be certainly, I'm sure we'll be talking stuff on Twitter and whatnot in the coming days and weeks.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
All right, man. Have a good one.
You too.
All right, guys, draft content in the books. You have any thoughts on what Kevin said or what I said or anything, Falcons or not Falcons related, you, of course, can contact me on the various social media platforms, Facebook, Locked On Falcons, Twitter, Locked On Falcons. If you hate social media, you can do so via email, lockedonfalcons@mail.com. You can leave a comment at falcfans.com where the podcast is posted daily. Yeah, hit me up. Let's talk draft. We got more draft-related content. Got 2.5 weeks now of draft-related content coming your way. So keep it locked on the Locked On Falcons podcast.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.